welcome, everyone. This is January the 4th, 2017, the first Dorsey Wright podcast of the new year. This is Paul Keaton joining me today. Jay Gragnani, thank you so much.
Good morning.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Hope 17 is a little different than 16. Can we get that?
We can agree on that. We can agree on that. Well, at least the first couple of days have started off very, very differently than they did last year.
Heck of a lot better than last year. Last year, if you recall, the first day of the year was, as it turned out, not necessarily a foreshadowing of the entire year, but certainly a foreshadowing of the first 6 weeks or so, as it was the worst opening day for the market, or one of the worst opening days for the market. I think it was in the maybe the fifth or sixth worst, I think, first days of the year in January 2016. And then obviously the month of January was horrid all around. And then, you know, a few weeks after that, the markets found a bottom. And for many indices, that was the bottom. And you had a recovery, some consolidation, some more breakouts, and ultimately new all-time highs and markets that ended the year pretty strong. So all of that is in the rearview mirror, however, and the questions you're getting from clients today surely are not based on what the market's going to do in 2016, but rather, what should we be doing in 2017? And it's always that time of the year where you learn to dance, because the last thing you want to do is paint yourself into a corner with a prediction that 6 months from now you'd like to undo. And, you know, so right now you want to avoid being in the prediction business, but rather, you know, base your decisions today on, you know, what's the best information the market gives us? Do we have a plan that allows us to invest in those types of things? And, you know, when things change, we'll change too. But for the time being, there's some pretty interesting themes early in the year.
Yeah. You know, and let's start with equities just for a second. And you know, one of the things that's unavoidable, and, you know, we're not going to talk a lot about is necessarily, but, you know, Dow 20,000, right? That's the big headline that everybody talks about. And while it's interesting to talk about, it's fun to talk about, and you know, talk about when 20,000 is going to get there or not, when we look at a point and figure chart, 20,000 is more important than just a number. It actually, on if you look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average and you look at a point and figure chart of that, it represents what we would consider to be a triple top breakout at 20,000, which would obviously be a new all-time high on the chart, new all-time high for the index. But putting that number into perspective, into context, is certainly more helpful than just throwing out 20,000. So when you look at the chart of the Dow Jones Industrial Average now, and it's, you know, something very useful to do, whether it's Dow, the S&P, the NASDAQ indexes, look at them, and they tell a lot just by looking at the pictures of those. Right now you look at the Dow, 20,000 is a nice breakout. The overall trend here is still positive, and I think as we head into 2017, that is a trend. Is U.S. equity, the major indexes are in positive trends. The vast majority of stocks are in positive trends. And so while 20,000 is a number that everybody's going to talk about and banter about, you know, the fact that the trends of those indexes are positive as we're heading into 2017, that's where we're looking today.
So the market will do what it wants to do. Regardless, you know, 50% of the people think that you know, the keys to the administration are getting handed over to the wrong guy and it's going to be a horrible 4 years. You know, the market seems to have a more optimistic outlook on things. And specifically within the U.S. market, if we keep going in that direction, one of the most interesting and compelling themes of 2017, even though it started probably 9 months ago, is the U.S. energy theme.
Yeah.
And that sector of the market, as in terms of how we view the world through relative strength relationships and an objective way of ranking big, broad groups of the market through a series of thousands of relative strength relationships, energy is the number one ranked broad sector in the U.S., and that's something we can say today for the first time in over 5 years. That's not a small thing, and that completes a move from worst to first for the U.S. energy sector. If we were to look 9 months ago at the ranking of 11 broad sectors in the U.S., energy was dead last. Mm-hmm. When we look today, it's number one, a quasi-tie, if you will, with technology, which has been the most consistent sector trend of the last 3 years. But energy, it's a extremely compelling story. The other thing you can say about energy is that when you look at its pieces – you know, and not really favoring things like Exxon or Chevron, you know, based on market capitalization, but instead just looking at the sum of those pieces and treating every stock the same, you have the majority of energy stocks on relative strength buy signals for the first time in over 5 years as well. That's a significant event, and the fact that all that's happening with the dollar, U.S. dollar, going to new highs as well, which is typically somewhat of a headwind for energy stocks or anything commodity sensitive, that says something as well. So energy would have to be on that list of powerful, stable, and I would say confident trends heading into 2017.
Well, and it's not just the stocks; it's the commodities themselves. I mean, you look at a chart of crude oil, and crude oil is, if you want to look at a picture of how commodities stocks would tend to trend. I mean, look at a chart of crude oil. And it was in 2014, just a couple years ago, in the summer of 14, that a barrel of crude oil was trading hands for $100. And by February of 2016, that chart, crude oil, had fallen all the way down into the 20s, upper 20s. Mm-hmm. And last year, about that nine-month time period ago, is when you began to see that chart for crude oil move back into a positive trend, definitively penetrating what we would call the bearish resistance line or downtrend line, and has been in a positive trend since April of last year. And just this month, as we're now into 2017, is hit 55, has given another breakout on its chart at $55 a barrel, and it's now back at its highest level since July of 2015, and you look at that chart of crude oil. So, you know, again, one of the things that we talk a lot about is just cover up the name and ask yourself, mm-hmm. is this the type of picture that demand would be in control? Does this look like the type of picture that is supporting higher prices? And if you're looking at, you know, whether it's crude oil or whether it's any number of energy stocks or, frankly, any number of energy ETFs, you know, the answer for the vast majority of those is demand's in control there.
Well, you know, I've got a close relative that asks a question and say, well, you know, what's the dividend on a barrel of crude oil? You know? And when you give him the answer, he'd say, you know, call me with your next great idea. And, you know, and so you have to be sensitive to the fact that, you know, there's going to be income clients, mm-hmm. and they're going to need ideas, investment ideas as well, but it's going to have to contribute to the whatever that income is that they need on a monthly or quarterly basis. And, you know, that takes you to another, I would say, very strong and related trend of 2017, and that would be MLPs. Mm-hmm. And it's about as close as you're going to get to a barrel of crude oil while doing so in a way that's, you know, within a kind of a traditional income genre. And MLPs are, you know, in some respects they're difficult, and in other respects they're an extremely useful investment category. But as many people found in 2015 and a little bit of 2014 as well, people can and do lose money in these limited partnerships. And a master limited partnership, or MLP, is typically an entity or a security that's tracking something that's not structured as a corporation, but rather structured as a partnership. So there's a different tax treatment for that. An MLP is going to distribute a tax document as a K-1, and that complicates the use of those securities in some types of accounts, primarily IRAs. However, as the world has evolved, or the financial services world anyway has evolved, securities have been created that allow for MLPs to be bought really as an asset class, used within qualified accounts and non-qualified accounts in a single ticker fashion. So it's a much more approachable investment category, and so I think it's really been brought into the light a bit over the past 5 years. However, one of those 5 years was 2015, when MLPs were taken out to the woodshed, mm-hmm. really. And you know, depending on the index, they were down 30% to 40% in 2015. So it's not a riskless endeavor. However, what you've seen over the past 6 months is pretty much any, you know, MLP product has moved back into a positive trend, the largest of which is an ETF, AMLP, and that's tracks an Alerian MLP index, owns 20 to 30 securities, and, you know, has a nice yield of about 8%. And that's, you know, that ETF is structured in such a way where it can be used within qualified accounts or non-qualified accounts. So it's an interesting product. We were able to work with some partners over at Elkhorn and Bank of Montreal, and we were able to build a, you know, the first MLP-based product that is managed using relative strength. And so there's various ways that you can consider the MLP world. BMLP is the Dorsey Wright indexed version, and that's something that may be appropriate for you and your clients, but there's a number of securities out there such as AMLP and others. Point being that this is something where typically these MLP, most of them are pipeline or something related to pipelines, and so they're kind of considered the toll booth of the energy world. And these are things that, you know, when the trend is behind them, they're high income investment categories, and right now the trend is certainly favoring MLP investments.
Yeah, so you get the income, but you also get the growth potential there as well.
Yeah.
You know, and income is not a theme that's going away. I mean, given the state of interest rates these days, I mean, it's only been a matter of time of, you know, when interest rates are going to rise. And obviously we saw the initial spike post U.S. presidential election within interest rates themselves. So, you know, rising interest rates, while good for some things, are generally not good for your bond portfolios. Mm-hmm. You get rising interest rates, and that's going to adversely affect the prices of your fixed income bond funds, especially those that are U.S. Treasury focused. And so things like MLPs or things that are tend to be less correlated or things that move more independently from U.S. Treasuries are going to be things that become much more attractive in the yield space. Obviously, MLPs, there's a number of others that you can look at as well. But you look at just interest rates themselves, and again, I mean, the 10-year yield index, symbol TNX, you can look at on our site for what's going on with the 10-year yield index, that TNX chart, and that's charting.
Looks like the Dow's chart.
Interest rates itself, it does. It looks exactly like the Dow's chart. Yeah. You know, moved back into a positive trend this year, has now moved up to a not all-time high, but
not
certainly
quite.
Moved up to multi-year highs.
Not quite an all-time high.
But if you're holding U.S. Treasury bond funds, that's not the type of picture you want to see, right? Mm. And so looking at some areas to diversify the income piece of a portfolio, if you're not just owning the bonds to maturity, looking at some areas for income is going to be a theme heading into 2017 that's going to continually need an answer and need some discussion around, you know. So I think things like MLPs, there's lots of other areas. There's 20 or so different areas within the just fixed income market that we look at on a daily basis.
Yeah, and that's another benefit of the proliferation of the ETF is that there's lots of aspects of fixed income that are much more accessible than they were 5 or 10 years ago. And there's probably no better example of that than the fixed income subsectors offered through, you know, the iShares or the State Street lineup. And, you know, you look at something like a long bond ETF, something that owns, you know, 10, 20, you know, 25-year U.S. Treasuries, that's going to be extremely susceptible or extremely rate sensitive, let's say. But you've got lots of elements of the bond market that really aren't particularly sensitive to, say, 10-year Treasury rates. They might be more susceptible to maybe what equity markets are doing, what the general, you know, credit health is of U.S. corporations, and might be tied to overseas bonds. And so something like a convertible bond ETF, CWB is an example from the Spiders lineup. And, you know, that's just a product and an area of the bond market that, you know, traditionally over time, it just isn't real rate sensitive. It tends to, you know, the things that make convertible bonds go up and go down are not typically the same things that would cause a U.S. Treasury bond to go up and go down. And so, you know, a convertible bond ETF would be an example of something that could be used while staying within traditional fixed income. It's the type of thing that could be used and, you know, without as much fear that a rise in interest rate has to be horrible for that investment.
Yeah.
There's other things, you know. High yield bonds tend to have a bit more correlation with equity markets. Overseas bonds, obviously, or just bringing the duration in. And mm-hmm. Right now, the long end of the Treasury curve is you know, it's always going to be susceptible to rising interest rates, but right now you've just got a little more reason to be concerned about interest rates.
Right. Yeah.
Any more great ideas for 2017?
Well, you know, we could sit here and talk all day about what we think the market's going to do in 2017. You know, I think those are just some big theme ideas that are certainly prevalent right now. As always, we'll continue to monitor the situation and see what goes on as the year plays out. And you know, January historically is a pretty telling time for the market. We'll see if that holds true this year or not. But I think that hits the big topics.
Yeah. There's plenty of things, and we'll talk about more as the year progresses. And you know, banks are certainly one of those that we probably glossed over. That's something all of you guys are probably you know, very much in tune with and very much concerned about. And you know, certainly the U.S. banking sector looks about as positive as it has in many years. Similar to energy, mm-hmm. The majority of U.S. banks are on have positive relative strength versus the U.S. market for the first time in a number of years. So it's another one of those trends, and you know, more will arise as we walk through the year.
For sure.
So thanks for joining me. Thank you guys for joining us. We look forward to a great 2017. We'll talk to you again next week.